Jeff Bass is the greatest player that's ever played in Florida.
This Nugget's pink, and I hate it.
About to go hard for 50 minutes.
You can't say stuff like this on podcast, all right?
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, November 20th, 2009. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today, two football writers who can't quite turn the corner. We got Bobby Colovi.
How you doing, Dale?
And Mike McCall.
We're here to talk about the MLS Cup Final, right? We're previewing that?
Yeah, that's in the third segment, I think.
All right, great.
Stick around for that, Mike. Just hold on, talk about football for a little while, and I promise we'll talk about the MLS.
Football.
Yeah, the real football, as those kids out there say. So we do have a lot to talk about in today's show before we, you know, inevitably don't talk about the MLS Cup. I'm sorry, we may have to push that talk to a later show. Sorry, Mike. Maybe later, yeah. But we got a lot to talk about. Florida football, we're going to talk about UF's inability to make big plays on offense, especially compared to last year. Talk about some comments Urban Meyer made earlier in the week about some of his NFL draft caliber juniors. Also address some rumors regarding Urban Meyer and the inevitably open Notre Dame coaching job.
It's not open yet.
Yeah, that's why I said inevitably open. It's coming.
It's not going to be.
Yeah, I'll bet. And then we're going to briefly preview the big Florida International game this weekend, probably talk a little Florida basketball, round out the show with our Gator guarantees. But let's jump right into the stuff about the big plays, Bob. You wrote the feature that was in today's paper. You can check it out on alligatorsports.org. Just go ahead and say what your extensive research found.
The extensive research found that Percy Harvin was indeed amazing last season. And this season, they just haven't been able to really replace the big plays that him and also Lewis Murphy left behind when they took off for the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, Lewis Murphy graduates, so it's not really his fault.
Yeah.
But basically, last year, they had 40 plays over 20 yards or more in conference games, I don't really count the cupcakes. And this year, they're down to 31, and they call the big plays over 20 yards.
Yeah.
But more telling is that if you put it to the over 30 yards, the ridiculously big plays at this point, last year 20 of the 40 were over 30, and this year it's down to 10.
Wow.
So they're really not, and they're not going for touchdowns. Only 9 of them are touchdowns, and 17 last year went for touchdowns. So they're definitely doing a much, they're just not breaking off the huge plays.
All right, and we talked more about why this is, why it's different. You know, you can say, well, Percy's gone, but that's one player. You'd think you have guys like Jeff Dems, Chris Rainey, Deontay Thompson, sort of explosive guys who aren't making these big plays.
Yeah, they got plenty of explosives.
According to Steve Adazio, they have plenty of explosives.
Well, they're supposed to be, but without Percy and without Lewis, obviously teams are going to focus more on stopping the run because there's three great backs that UF has that can break off the big runs. And this year, the three backs only have 8 between them in the conference games. Mm. And only Moody, out of those three, has a run over 30 yards. Jeff Demps' longest is 25. Okay. And Demps last year, he had 6 runs over 20 yards. And all of them, every single one, went over 30 yards. And I think only one of those was not a touchdown run either.
Wow.
So he clearly is being bottled up. The big thing defenses are doing is they're coming from the outside. They're making sure that, you know, UF can only run the dive play that everybody hates, because if they come to the outside, they've got a linebacker sitting right there waiting. So they're going to have to pound it in the middle for a long time until they finally let the outsides kind of clear up a little bit, and then they can try to get one around the corner. But the big thing is, since there's obviously going to be more people in the box when you're running inside, it's a lot harder to break off the really big run. You've got to make people miss. You got to break tackles. You got to do a lot more. It's going to be up to the receivers for the most part to get those plays. And, well, we've all seen what the receivers can do. They're dropping balls, but more importantly, they're not making people miss. I mean, everyone remembers Percy would catch, he'd come across the field, catch the ball 5 yards, and take it, 60, 70 yards. They're just not doing that. They're getting, Riley Cooper did it last week. He caught a slant route, 168 yards. They need more of that. They need people to catch the ball and make plays after it. And they're running screens and it's going for 6-7 yards, which they've got to be able to break off bigger plays.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you look at the way it breaks down between the receiving and passing, for the receiving and running for the big plays, You know, last year they had 22 pass plays of over 20 yards. This year, 16. But the average of those plays over 20 yards is 33 yards each in each season. Huh. The run game is where it's really dropped off in terms of the average yardage of those big plays. Because last year, the runs that weren't Percy that went for more than 20 yards averaged 35 yards a touch, right? This year, it's down to 25. So they've dropped off quite a bit in the run department on the big plays. And like you said, Jeff Demps, I mean, you haven't seen the kind of runs out of them that you had last year. The receiving game, like the bang for the buck is there. There aren't as many bucks. and, you know, that obviously you look back at some of the drops. Deontay had a dropped long touchdown. Yeah. Cooper had two last week. Who else had one? Did Brandon James drop one?
Brandon James had one, a drop. I think Riley's had one previous to this as well. But the big thing, I think, is that although they're doing about the same as last year in the pass game, because the run game is, like, defenses are focusing more on the run game, the pass game has to have more. They need to be doing a lot more of the percentage of the big plays, because the running backs just aren't going to be able to as much because they're being forced inside. So if you're taking away their chances for a big play, it's got to come from the outside. So the receivers have to be doing it. And it's got to be more than Riley Cooper and Aaron Hernandez, who are the only ones really doing it. I think Deontay's got one or two over. David Nelson, who he had, I think, two or three last season that were 40, 50-yard gains. His longest yard this year is 14 yards. Mm. They have to try getting them the ball. They can't just keep going to Cooper and Hernandez.
I view this as a little circular, though, because I feel like we are expecting the running backs to get the big plays, and because they're not, you expect the receivers to. But then
expect the running backs. They should, like, they're the guys that can be. But if they're being forced inside and they're getting 20-yard gains, which is good for inside runs, they're just not going to be able to get. They're not going to be able to get game-changing plays. Mm. I mean, you might occasionally get, like, a team that lets you get to the outside. Like, they'll be able to do it against FIU because they're faster than FIU. But against SEC, against Alabama, Alabama's going to make sure they're staying inside and they're running right into Mount Cody. I mean, you just not – it's not going to be very – it's good. Like, they'll be, you know, effective with it, but it's not going to be game-changing. They're not going to break off the 40, 50-yard runs that they were able to last you. Last year, you need receivers making big plays, and they're just not doing it.
So what has to be done here? I mean, I know by being horrible with the media and turning himself into a cartoon character, Steve Adazio has kind of made himself to blame for this. I mean, they averaged like 44 points a game in SEC play last year, and it's like 27 this year. And Adazio has made himself the face of that, in that Dan Mullen left, and then the offense hasn't been as good, and then he looks like an idiot whenever he speaks to the media. But all these receiver problems we're talking about are drops. Like, these are the
players. But it's not just drops as well, because, I mean, even Urban admit that, like, you know, you've had guys take, you know, 5-6 yard routes and, you know, go do something with it. They're not doing something with it. They're taking 5 yards and they're getting they're getting a 9 yard gain. They've got to be able to, you know, take a 10 yard stop and turn into a 20, 30-yard gain. They've got to be able to do that, and they're just not making those plays.
Right,
it's not so much Adazio's fault that, like, the receivers are not making those plays. It might be a little bit on Tebow that he's not spreading the ball around. Obviously, I mean, teams are game-planning to take away David Nelson, Brandon James, and Deontay Thompson.
Obviously.
So he's only going to Riley Cooper and Aaron Hernandez. But, I mean, you've got to be able to spread the ball. You've got to have some trust. Even if they've dropped a couple balls, I mean, Riley's dropped a couple balls. Do you see him not going back to Riley for the rest of the year? Like, he's going to keep going. Like,
I mean, he's got to throw the ball somewhere.
Yeah, he's got to start trusting the other receivers. He's got to throw it to them because they're open at times. I mean, we've all seen them open, like, in the middle of the field, and they're just not being thrown the ball. They've got to get the ball to other people. That way, teams can, you know, it's a little bit more spread out. It's not focused on trying to, like, contain, like, Riley Cooper to shorter routes. The big thing is, Adazio just needs to admit that something's wrong. Urban Meyer, I've never felt as though I would go to Urban Meyer and feel like I'm being told the truth, but that's how it is right now. He at least will admit something's wrong. He thinks it can be fixed, but he admits something's wrong. Steve Adazio, there's nothing wrong. Everything's great. This is exactly how we plan it to be. They just need to catch the ball. And they do need to catch the ball. You can't have those drops, but you've got to be making other plays. They've got to be doing a little bit better offensively. You can't expect them to score the 44 points that they did last year. That's unreasonable. Mm-hmm. But they've got to be able to finish off drives. You've got to score when you've got the chances to. When you've got the ball on the opposing team's side of the field, pretty much every, like, four or five times in the second half, you've got to finish those drives. Whether or not it's big plays or not, those drives have to be finished. They have to be scored. And that's where Adazio is to be blamed. Because teams are able, as they've said in the past, I went on the rant last week, teams know their scheme and tendencies. That's what they're saying. That teams are doing a good job of knowing their schemes and tendencies. That's their job. I mean, Adazio's job is to make sure that it's not as predictable and teams can't just stop them as easily as they have been.
Yeah.
They point to the drop ball, which is one touchdown last week, and the three missed field goals. But those missed field goals, two of them, I mean, are over 50 yards. They're not. It's not like they were put it on the board. It's easy. Shots. I mean, as great of a leg as Caleb Sturgis has, it's still not a guarantee from 50 yards out. You've got to get it closer at least for him. Uh-huh. If you want to count those points as points that should have been on the board.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got to finish drives. They've got to finish them with touchdowns. They did that. I want to say six times last year in conference play or something like that. They did not score a touchdown.
I got that
in red
right
zone.
Here. Here's your red zone touchdown stat. Last year, 27-37. That's 73% of red zone touchdowns. This year, 12-38, 32%.
Yeah, you've got to finish. That's
abysmal.
That's something that schematically goes on the coaches, right?
The
passing game, the plays have been there. And also, I wanted to ask you about this. In your story, you have this quote from Adazio where he says, "You've got to make those plays. If you go back and systematically look through the season, you'll see that they're there to be made." This is the first time to me. I want to hear what the whole interview is like, because you have two quotes in the story from him that are pretty, sane and reasonable and kind of putting it on the players, which is where that area of the blame deserves to go,
I wish I had the whole interview. It was the first time I asked him what defense we're doing differently to prevent, those really big runs from him. Nothing. They've ran the ball just as effectively as last year, which actually is not true. They last year in conference games, they ran the ball 311 yards for 1,790 yards for an average of 5.8. This season, they ran it 53 times for 1,646, and the average is down to 4.7. Huh. So they're not running the ball as well as they did last year. So, I mean, he clearly didn't. Then I rephrased the question, and he answered it saying that defenses are taking away the outside runs. So I don't know why he didn't want to answer me the first time.
Well, he had to defend himself and make himself look like nothing's wrong. So,
but this is my question. Is he started, because you remember earlier in the year the Tebow concussion, and he said, you know what, it's my fault. He was trying to put everything on himself. And now that it's gotten so in overdrive, everyone getting all over Adazio, is he kind of shifting to putting some of it on the players now? Because this is the first time I've heard him say something like this, like what he said in your story, where if you go back and look, those plays are there to be made. We're setting them up to make these plays or not.
Yeah, I mean, but I think he was saying, because the question was, is it more than just drops? Is it, are they doing do they need to be doing something else to get these plays? And it was pretty much, he was saying, it's only drops. They've got to make those plays. You've got, those are the plays that are there. When I asked Urban pretty much the same thing, it's, they're not taking those short routes long. They're not making short routes into big gains. And that's, they need to be doing that as well on top of catching the ball. David Nelson also said the same thing. So, Adazio, he's putting some blame on the players by saying they've got to make those plays. But he should also realize that it's more than just them dropping those deep passes. They need, and again, this isn't on him. If the receivers are not making plays, you can't do anything about it. There's only so much you can do in practice for them to, learn how to break a tackle. Yeah. I mean, you can't teach someone to be shifty, to have that elusiveness like Percy Harvin. You can't teach it. They have it or they don't. And they've just got to work on, I guess, maybe reading their blocks better, something, whereas they can use something to their advantage to get away from one guy. Because, I mean, they're good. Riley Cooper and David Nelson are both good blocking receivers.
Uh-huh.
So when they run a screen or something, usually there's probably going to be one defender that the person has to beat. Just one. And they're not doing it. You've got to beat one defender, and then you can have a big play. And they're not doing that.
I view the receiving problems as more twofold, one of which you sort of just touched on there. It's personnel. You cannot do the same things you did last year with this group. David Nelson is not he's not going to break tackles and burn down the field. Deontay Thompson clearly has not proven himself capable of being even really a weapon in this offense.
Deontay,
so far.
I would like to see, because he's probably the fastest of them, either Riley Cooper, but I think he's a little shiftier than Riley.
No, yeah.
He should be, I feel as though he should be, sent across the field, giving him some open space, kind of move everyone one way, bring him the other way. Yeah. So if it's man on man, it's going to be him and one defender, and he's just got to beat him and then use his speed. And they're not doing that with him.
Got to run it twice, though, because he's going to drop one of them.
Yeah. That's fine. But, I mean, they use him in that way. I feel as though he's either running a stop route, an out, or a fade, that's it.
You know who they're doing this stupid stuff with, though? Brandon James. For no reason. Yeah. He's out in space. He's probably
the shiftiest of them all. But he's also become very impatient. He started showing some patience last week. But the first couple returns he had were just really bad. They weren't, like, he was trying to force too much. And I think it was to the fact that he's not getting as many touches. Teams on kickoff are, you know, obviously trying to ball him up. Punt, they're barely kicking to him.
Yeah.
And when he gets the ball, he wants to score a touchdown with it. I mean, obviously he wants to score it every time, but he's trying to force it. Whereas in the past, he'd find the hole, hit it, make one or two moves, and he was gone.
Yeah.
He hasn't been doing that this year until towards the end of last week's game when he was making those big returns and punt. He's become more patient. And you can see him when he gets the ball on offense, he wants to do everything with it. And you've just got to sometimes take what you're given. If you've got one guy to make him miss. But if you've got three or four, you're not going to make them all miss. Take what you're given.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's get to the bottom of the offense right now. Let's figure out what needs to be done, what can be done, how you should feel about it, who's to blame, and get it over with, because I'm tired of talking and hearing about the offense. I got tired of this about 5 weeks ago. So
the problem is they haven't fixed anything from 5 weeks ago, which is very surprising
to
me.
Here's my question. Briefly.
Can they? Yes.
Because they can't get better personnel.
No, that's it, yeah.
Andre DeBose can't come back. Percy Harvin, Lewis Murphy can't come back. Carl Moore, the man, can't come back. So you're not going to get any new personnel at receiver. They need to not drop passes. I don't really think they're going to shake people. Using Deontay differently is a good move. I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even playing. I'm kind of shifting toward the Omarius Hines point of view. Yeah, I hope he does. I hope he does well this weekend against FIU and then is able to play against FSU. But in the passing game, it seems to me like it's mostly on the players. They have to catch their passes. Tebow has to make better decisions.
They've started doing this more the last couple of weeks, and they've worked. The two plays to Riley Cooper were over the middle. They haven't used the middle of the field very much in the passing game.
In the passing game?
No,
at all.
They've used the outsides a lot.
Vertical routes and getting to the outside.
If they start running, I mean, I think David Nelson, he's a tall guy. He can use his body well. He can use his length. Send him over the middle on a post, something where he can use his size. But, like, they're not doing that. They're hitting him with the stop routes. And once he gets a stop route, he's not going to make that's a route for someone else to make someone miss if you want a big playoff.
Yeah.
They need to utilize the middle of the field more in the passing game for me. And not just as, like, a distraction to get someone away from the outside route. I don't know if they just don't feel confident with the receivers going over the middle or Tebow throwing in that with like that many people over the middle of the field if they're in a zone. So I don't know what it is that they're not wanting to use the middle field, but there's been like they just haven't even like looked like they've been attempting to until last week. And the two plays that were over 30 yards were a post by Riley Cooper and the slant by Riley Cooper, both over the middle of the field.
Huh.
I mean, they should be used in the entire field and not being able, because I mean, if you put yourself on the outside, they're all about open space. But if you're on the outside by the sidelines, you can only work your way back. But if you're over the middle, you can go left, you can go right. You have more options of where to go. But otherwise, if you run a corner route, you're stuck in that corner. Like, you can only use the sideline at that point. They need to use more of the field. The running game, they're going to have to take what they're given. If teams are only letting them run in the middle of the field, they're going to have to stick to it. They're going to have to keep pounding it away with the small guys. But they've been doing a good job. And every once in a while, you'll get the play outside, and they're going to break it away. Tebow's got to be more patient. He can't tuck the ball as soon as he sees an opening, like a running lane. He's got to let the play develop. There was the Deontay's drop this week where he was like sliding towards the sideline and just wasn't able to stay in bounds and make the catch. He was wide open on a post route, wide open. And Tebow had not left the pocket yet. By the time Tebow got out, got around somewhere, Deontay was almost out of bounds by the time he threw it. So it would have been a tough catch. He's got to make that initial throw over the middle of the field when Deontay's open.
That was going to be my point, is I think Tebow is to blame for some of this, because you're taking away plays that are possibly designed to be bigger plays, you know, receivers running different routes, and you're turning them into 2-yard runs every time because Tebow's just, you know, packing it up and running for 3 yards and getting tackled.
He's got to be a little bit more patient. I think it's something where he doesn't want to get sacked, obviously, and he's worried if he stays in there a little too long, he's going to get sacked because, the offensive line hasn't been as good as they expected it to be, and he doesn't have as much confidence in some of the receivers, and he feels as though if they're going to do something, he's got to do it. And he can't, like, he's going to get blamed for sacks. He doesn't want to do it. But sometimes you have to stay in the pocket. If he moves up in the pocket, which is, you know, I mean, most quarterbacks know, like, they move around in the pocket to actually make the pocket, like, a place for them to step up in and make a throw. If he has to step up, he's running, which it shouldn't be the case.
Okay, so what should we realistically expect can or would get better? What does everyone have a right to complain about if it doesn't change? Because at this point, we've kind of seen what this team's about. Like, they're going to squander a few opportunities, and they're not going to put up the same point totals they did last year. I mean, I feel like last week, if Cooper makes those two catches in the end zone, everybody's happy. I mean, that's 14
points. Yeah, we're talking
like
we did after the Georgia game.
That's a pretty good total for Tebow. Yeah. It helps him in the Heisman race. I mean, so what is there realistically that can be complained about down the road other than them dropping passes? Because schematically, some things are wrong, but it's not like it's going horribly. I mean, they're pretty much – they've been reduced, and I know that people don't want to hear this after what they've seen the last 2 years. They've been reduced to, like, your average good college football team where, like, you're really good on one side and not so great on the other. And it's like – when I remember, like, when the Baltimore Ravens won the Super Bowl a couple years ago, it was like, oh, their defense is so badass. Who cares if it's Trent Dilfer and the offense can't do anything? Defense is so good with this team. It's like, that poor defense. The offense can't do anything. What's wrong with this? And it's just because of the culture that was built here beforehand. But, I mean, all that aside, from what we've seen this year, you just look at that in a bubble because this is the team you have now, not last year's. What can be complained about in a week or two?
Well, first of all, I'd argue it's not culture because this is a talented team. Like, you have players on this team who can make plays and who can score a bunch of points. Most of them did it last year. So I'd argue it's not all beforehand.
Even if they're not breaking off those big plays, they're able to drive the ball, right? You've seen them. They move the ball down the field. There's no reason that once they get in the red zone, once they get close to the end zone, they cannot be, I guess, a little bit more creative because apparently defenses are doing a good job of stopping them there. They've got to be able to, as coaches, figure a way to beat defenses in the red zone because if they're not a bad offense, if they score. And they're moving the ball, their yardage is not bad. It's not like their yards are bad. It's their scoring that they are struggling with. They've got to be able to finish drives. If you finish those drives, give them 5-6 more touchdowns in the conference games, they're not like they've got to finish those drives. Right. It's not just missed field goals because you can't be always settling for field goals and then blaming like, oh, we missed 3 points. No, you got to finish that with 6 points. That's their problem is that they're not finishing drives. And that's somewhat on the coaches because, I mean, in the red zone, there really haven't been too many drop balls. There's, you know, it's on the long ones that we've seen them drop. They need to be better of beating defenses, of keeping them on their toes. Because defenses seem to know, like, what's coming when the Gators get close. They have their plays that they like going to. I mean, one of the few times they've done something different in the red zone was the 4th-and-1 play against Vandy, where they did an option, Seth Tebow up in the middle. Everyone on Vandy crashed in. And once he got to the pitch, no one was catching Jeff Demps. That's what you need to do. You need to throw in plays, or not even throw in new plays, but throw in a play that people aren't expecting you to run in that situation. You've got to keep defenses guessing, and defenses are just guessing right every single play. And that can't happen. You have to keep them guessing and guessing wrong.
All right, so this is what's crazy to me, is that like this coaching staff, Adazio and Meyer, because you know Meyer's still very involved with the offense, on a week-to-week basis are getting consistently like out-game played in the red zone.
So is it
something that like they're not used to because they haven't had to worry about it because they've had Percy Harvin and he was like the man in the red zone?
This has confused me, I think, as much as it's confused Urban Meyer. Is Urban Meyer, even when the offense has struggled, he has been able to figure out a way to pull him out of it. Yeah. And he hasn't been able to do that this season. And I think that's one of the reasons he's been so testy lately. He is so upset that he cannot figure out what is wrong. Yeah. Why can't this team score? He can't figure it out. Which I'm pretty surprised about because even when they struggled, I always assumed they were going to get out of it. Urban Meyer would figure it out. Even if it wasn't Adazio, Urban Meyer would figure a way out. And he hasn't this season. Yeah. And I think that is top of the all of the expectations of the preseason expectations and the pressure that's been on him, I think him not being able to figure out how to fix his offense has frustrated him much more than anything else this season.
All right, let's do, because we've talked a lot about, like, you know, vague stuff in general, you know, ideology and stuff they can do. I want one specific, you know, strategy type thing and one specific personnel thing you would do if you were Urban Meyer, you were Steve Adazio, to fix the offense. We didn't talk about this before, so go ahead and think for a little while. I'll start. Instead of lining up, this is personnel-wise, instead of lining up, you know, Moody or Demps and Rainey and especially Brandon James out in the slot, out wide, you bring in those receivers who can make plays. You bring in Amarius Hines. Frankie Hammond Jr. can run, you know, a better receiving route than Brandon James, what I would assume, because he's a wide receiver. He's not a kick returner playing wide receiver. So in terms of personnel, I think that's something I would do. Let's start with that. Bob, you got?
I want to see more triple option. I want to see more. You have Moody, Rainey, you know, Demps, two of the three in the backfield with you. Have one go into the inside route with Tebow reading the outside. If there's someone crashing in, hand the ball, let it go. If someone's, if you only got one defensive end coming at you, you pull that, you pitch it to the guy, and let him get on the outside. You've got to be able to give yourself an option to run up the middle if they're taking out the outside run. But if they're not, you're sending two people on the outside. So if there's only one guy out there, you beat him. I mean, I think more triple option would be effective this season, especially if you put two of your three good running backs in the backfield.
What I was going to say is kind of on the same track. Yeah. The two backs in the backfield I've really liked this year, and you have those two guys back there with Tebow. And it seems like you have a lot of options, a lot of different things you can do from there, and I would like to see more of that. Also, when you were talking about Meyer being frustrated, there's a great quote in your feature that just made me laugh. Meyer said, "I remember one year Bubba Caldwell caught a bubble screen and took it 70 yards." I remember that one time. That's ridiculous.
I see him like sitting around with Steve Adazio. Hey, you remember that one time Bubba caught that screen pass for over 70 yards? They cry a little bit, like tears rolled down their eyes.
There's just no, like, to me, there's no down point in having one guy do an inside run and one guy do an outside run. Because if the outside's there, you need to take it. But at least you have the option that, like, it's not like either the running back or Tebow. Because Tebow, I mean, he's been good, but he's not breaking off that huge run. He's just not. I mean, once he gets 20, 25 yards, defenses are going to catch him.
Yeah.
What's part two of this?
It's like a strategy thing, purely. That was more personnel, like putting both running backs in the backfield, putting the playmaking wide receivers more in for, you know, guys out in the slot. Strategy-wise, honestly, I would simplify things. The I form worked fairly well that one time in the Reds.
I know.
And a pass out of the I form.
Yeah. There was a pass. Over the middle.
That's
to Deontay.
That's the thing. That's everything we've said we wanted. A pass over the middle to Deontay in a simplified system.
And the I form. That makes everyone happy.
Exactly.
Each one of us gets a piece. If it had been Amarius Hines, we'd all be singing Kumbaya together.
They can't do the I form too much because
then it's a wrinkle.
But they can throw it out there once or twice.
Things
are to the point where there's no reason not to run the
exactly.
Throw out the wing tee, utilize all three backs at the same time. Something, I don't know.
That's my strategy thing. Simplify it for Tebow. Don't give him the choice to, like, oh, what do I do here? Like, Riley's covered and there's a hole there. I should run now. Just drop back three steps, get rid of the ball. I don't care who it goes to. Just get rid of the ball like that. That will make it easier on him. It'll make things a little quicker, more efficient. And also, just don't do the bonsai ever again.
Yeah. If you're going to do the bonsai, like, commit to it and do it for real. Like,
yeah,
what
don't
you
do
saw,
this.
What
like,
you saw, they didn't. It's not like they ran it in the Georgia game, but their general offensive philosophy against Georgia was they were going to do what they wanted and force their will in Georgia and be aggressive and not just react to what the defense was giving them. And the bonsai has been totally reactionary this year. It's like, we're going to hurry up to the line, and then we're going to audible three times. We're going to stand around, look at the sideline, maybe have a delay.
And then
someone will have an illegal shift or be offside. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Great play.
I don't understand how you just don't run the play you're given. There was one time against Vanderbilt. They rushed up to the line. Vanderbilt, not set at all. No. Five yards away. And whatever play you run in that situation will work. The defense is not set up.
Yeah.
They wait, look to the sideline and get an audible. Let Vanderbilt get back to the line. Run the play. You obviously, it's not that they're sending in the bonsai package. Like, listen, like, we're going to run it. We're going to run to the line, but we don't have a play yet. We have to look to the sideline. They have a play from the bonsai. One play that they're going to run when they get up to the line. And then they're like, oh, well, this doesn't look good. Let's look to the sideline.
It doesn't look good because half the defense is
still
running on
the
field.
Yeah, no,
The Panthers did this last night against the Dolphins. It infuriated me. Jake DeLone, the Dolphins had like three guys on defense. They get up to the line and it like backs away and calls an audible. What are you doing?
This is just a certain play that they used to run with CI all the time. Especially, I guess, when you get 3rd and 4, 3rd and 3, it's Tebow time. But, I mean, it shouldn't always be.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do the one thing where they had two receivers out wide. Like, they'd have twin receivers, and then it'd be CI in the slot. And both receivers would run slants, and CI would go underneath them. And if they're in man coverage, no linebacker was staying with CI. He was able to get at least a 5-yard gain, and sometimes he broke that longer. Aaron Hernandez is a good tight end. He's athletic, and I think he might be a little bit tougher of a runner than CI, because although CI was kind of scary, he didn't always break it. He was not going to lower his shoulder and break tackles, whereas I think Aaron Hernandez has done a much better job of breaking tackles. Run that play occasionally on 3rd and 3. Mm. It worked. I don't know.
I'm going kind of opposite of Adam, but not as a general philosophy, just maybe once a game. Run a trick play. Do something really complicated.
Yeah, that would
crazy.
Be my other thing.
Just do something kind of fun and exciting, especially this weekend against FIU, or next week to embarrass FSU.
Exactly.
Make the fans happy if you pull it off.
I want Tim Tebow to catch a pass against FSU.
He practices catching passes before a game, so he's ready.
Oh, he looked great. Him and Brantley were playing around with Scott Leffler before the South Carolina game. I'm not even kidding. Like Tebow tight end crap that I'm not on board with. Like I can kind of see it watching
He's practicing. He's getting ready for it.
He made some great sideline
catches. I thought
you were
going to say make the offense more complex. Don't even look to the sideline. Let Tebow call all of the adjustments. Turn him into Peyton Manning. Let him go loose.
They can play video games for 5 hours before they take the field and then call their own plays.
They have so much more sense in terms of getting out there. Trust me. All right, well, that escalated quickly. I didn't expect that to go on for 30 minutes. I feel like that scene in Anchorman after the fireworks.
But that's the last you're going to hear about it, so it's done, right? We're done with the offense forever? Can we all agree?
If they struggle against FIU, which I can't foresee, but I hope they do, just so we can continue talking about it. If they struggle against FIU, more questions will be up. I mean, there's no way you can defend struggling against FIU.
Yeah,
you can't
defend it. Should something
Steve,
go wrong
we're
there.
Coming for you. Get ready.
I'm sure after they struggle against FSU or something, we'll talk about it then. But hopefully for now, we can put this one to bed, at least until next time. So let's move on to the next topic. McCall, the comment Urban Meyer made earlier in the week about having 7 NFL draft caliber juniors. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, well, the question came up, like, it's getting that time of the year. Are you worried about the guys jumping to the NFL? Because you think about the impact in recruiting if they have an exodus of juniors go to the NFL. They got to fill all those spots. It's going to be really complicated. So let's go through the juniors, figure out who those 7 could be. There's a little bit of gray area. I think we all know for sure that Carlos Dunlap and Joe Hayden are definitely 2 going to the NFL. I think we all agree that Mike and Marquise Pouncey are also NFL prospects, although at guard and center, not the kind of people that are going to jump
usually
early.
Usually you get tackles who go to,
I mean, does
the
center, can center?
No. They don't go early. But okay.
But they're definitely of NFL
here's
caliber.
The thing with them is, one, if they stay another year, they're not helping the draft. You know, like, you only can go so high as a center and guard.
That's true.
And this is kind of the big thing this year is the potential rookie cap after or a lockout after next season.
Oh, yeah.
So it's get in the NFL now, get your money now, because you might not be able to get it for a while.
Maybe they have to go to the UFL.
Also, a big Supreme Court case that could affect this. We're going to talk about it in January.
I mean, everyone kind of expects Joe Hayden to leave, but this kind of fun. The Gators just got a commit from a cornerback, Josh Shaw. Oh, yeah. And his quote was, let's see. The coaches told me they love my speed. And Joe Hayden likely coming out this year.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'll have a chance to step in and play early. Yeah. So that clearly, to me, that's saying, like, the coaches are recruiting him. Hey, Joe's probably going to leave. There's going to be an open spot. Like, you can play right away.
I don't view that as much of a surprise, though. I've always
but it's just kind of like, if he's thinking it, he's probably being told by the coaches that Joe's probably going.
Coaches do lie, though, so.
Oh, no. Coaches do lie, which is why I hope Joe Hayden comes back. So Josh Shaw's just pissed off.
Poor Josh Shaw.
Okay, Aaron Hernandez, probably a little undersized for a tight end, but again, that's not something he can fix next year.
I mean, undersized tight end is kind of the it thing in the
Chris
NFL.
Cooley-esque.
Chris Cooley, I mean, Tony Gonzalez is not like...
He's not,
It's just, he's an athletic guy who can play. He's not a bad blocker, but if you put him on the line, he's going to be going up against defensive ends. He's going to have to get a little bit bigger. But, I think he's a good tight end. I think he'll make it in the NFL just fine. So it's very possible he's another guy that's, being told he's a second, third rounder, but... Mm-hmm. money might not be there the following year. Go now.
And right. How much does he have to gain coming back?
Yeah, not much. So we've got two spots left. I think we all agree on those five.
Yeah.
All right, now these are the guys left. You got Ahmad Black, Lawrence Marsh, Maurice Hurt, Marcus Gilbert, Carl Johnson, Emmanuel Moody, AJ Jones, Major Wright. Did I say him?
No,
I did not say Major Wright. And there's one more. Justin Trattow. That doesn't. Yeah. All right. So
I like Trattow.
All right, Ahmad Black.
I think he's NFL
Ahmad
caliber.
Black too small.
Yeah.
Major Wright.
Not skilled enough.
He's a really good hitter.
Yeah.
And I think that's like flashy.
Yeah.
I think we're getting to the point though that no matter which two we choose, they're not leaving early.
Yeah.
So
I think so too. I mean,
I think somebody could get dollar signs in their eyes, head out. Maybe, I don't know.
I like Gilbert or
I think
Gilbert and Johnson.
Yeah.
But they're
just
both
kind of Johnson's got that swag.
Yeah, but they'd have to I mean, they're both playing. Gilbert's playing tackle, isn't he?
Yeah. He's playing right tackle, but he's actually the equivalent of a left tackle because Steve
blind
is
side, yeah.
blind
he's
side, okay. taking the blind side.
I think he's a better shot than Johnson because Johnson hasn't been that great at tackling.
No.
He's much better at guard.
He's a little more versatile, but at the same time, you want that outside guy.
Yeah, no, I think Gilbert's probably one of the guys.
I like AJ Gilbert. Jones.
No, AJ Jones, he's too small.
And Emmanuel Moody. Bobby, you joke, they might want to get rid of
him. I think Meyer's so tired of Moody doing like well and him not giving him the ball that much, and people saying, what does Emmanuel Moody have to do? Why don't you give Emmanuel Moody the ball? I don't even think his ankle injury is that serious. He just doesn't want Moody on the field. It's probably a career-ending injury. I just think they want Moody gone.
Yeah.
So he's like, yeah, he's an NFL talent. Moody, go. The coach is telling me I'm a 6th or 7th rounder. Just get out of here. Go. You got the money. Get the money. Go. Run.
Special teams. You can make an impact there. All right, so if we say Gilbert's the 6th, can we come to a consensus on the 7th?
I think he's talking about Major.
Major.
So am I.
I think it's Major.
They loved Major when they were recruiting him. There was like a party in the football office when Major committed, when his facts came through. Everyone went nuts. Because the way he looks on tape, and I'm still a college, like his highlights in college, they're not going to show the lowlights. His highlights are pretty impressive. Him just crushing people.
He's done a good job this year of actually being a free safety. Where in the past, I feel as though he's always gone for that big hit. He's always been, you know, a step behind, a step too early against Oklahoma.
Yeah.
He's not always, you know, he just hasn't timed his runs well. He hasn't been able to cover the whole field. But he's done a much better job this year. They haven't been tested deep, obviously, as much. But he's done a good job back there. And he's always a threat to you know, just deliver a big blow. So I think he's a guy that has NFL talent, but I think people are going to tell him, you want to see a little bit more from you.
Yeah. Another curious thing you mentioned recruiting earlier that I think is going to be interesting to follow. I've talked about Ronald Powell before on this podcast, probably the top recruit in the nation, the defensive end. If you're looking at a guy like Dunlap going and almost, you know, being a guarantee that he's gone.
He's a first rounder.
Yeah.
Cunningham's gone anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So they're in Powell's ear about that. Like, you'll come in and you'll start.
Yeah.
I mean,
they'll definitely be telling him that. Also, Pete Carroll, poor guy, is going to be getting negative recruited. Not only is he having a bad year, but there's just the looming Reggie Bush, what's O.J. Mayo thing going over USC program.
I thought you were
going
to say O.J. Simpson.
O.J. Simpson's always there. You know, look what he did.
The specter of O.J. Simpson is still hanging over USC.
I just think Pete Carroll is being negative recruited, and Florida is the new USC.
Okay, all this stuff with the juniors going to the NFL, you got Tebow's draft stock, and the next thing we're going to talk about, when the season's over, it's just begun.
The fun is starting.
Awesome. So
yeah, no.
Let's get to the next thing, Meyer to Notre Dame. The rumors just keep popping up. They won't go away. Now, I've not been able to find this documented anywhere, but I've had two different people say it to me, which means it's probably made up and on a message board somewhere. But just for fun, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Base salary for Urban Meyer, $5 million a year, not including the incentives for getting the BCS, winning a bowl game, winning a national championship, all that stuff. Then he gets 3 special admissions per year at Notre Dame. Meaning, if someone made this up, they did a great job.
Yeah.
That means like the people who wouldn't normally academically qualify at Notre Dame, like they'll slide them in for him. It's nothing like illegal.
That can't
be
true.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how any of this stuff
works. That just can't be.
But
like, there's no way.
But anyway, so the way I look at it, it doesn't matter what this deal entails. I just went back and did some painstaking research. No one's gone from college to college after winning a national championship game, which is what I'm kind of anticipating he's going to do this year. He's got the team for it. But even if he doesn't, I mean, coaches don't leave this great of a situation to go to a worse situation in college football. And Notre Dame, think about what it would take for this. I mean, Meyer
What's Meyer's base salary now?
It's like 4.2 or something.
So it's not even a huge pay.
Right. Maybe I'm just like a poor, uneducated person in this regard, but it seems like going from like $4 million to $5 million really not that big of a deal. Honestly.
No.
But the amount of time
that
Meyer spends working, the fact that he gets money to pay for his kids' education, he gets an expense account for groceries, his cars, his house, his health care, everything's taken care of. $500,000 a year, you will live plenty comfortably. You also have a jet here you can use whenever you want. You don't need any more money. So money shouldn't matter. I don't think it really does. He doesn't have time to spend it anyway.
It's his dream job.
So, I mean, this literally is his dream job. The job that ever since he was little, he wanted to be the head coach in Notre Dame. He wants it. He has to be the head coach in Notre Dame. He won't feel fulfilled as a coach until he is the head coach of Notre Dame.
When he was a kid, that was a great job. Yeah. But it does not have the power to move mountains anymore like they think it does, because the amount that it would take to pull Meyer out of here with the way recruiting is gone, he would have about 3 weeks from the time where he would take the Notre Dame job until signing day. Everything would collapse in terms of recruiting. It would be a huge fight. The buyouts would be a problem. Also, think about Charlie Strong and everything. If Meyer's even considering taking a job at Notre Dame, or anywhere for that matter, he needs to be telling Charlie Strong right now, do not take the Memphis job or any crappy job that comes along, because I might leave and you might be able to take this job.
Yeah. UCF, some students started up a website to get strong to be the head coach.
Yeah. So if
everybody should be like,
if you're Charlie Strong and you take the UCF job and then Meyer leaves for Notre Dame, I'm flying to South Bend and strangling you. Like, it's over. It's over for Urban.
Notre Dame and Urban Meyer are not dumb enough to take the job after a national championship game. He would have to accept it right before, right after the SEC championship game.
When there's
he's not going to do it. You cannot be dumb enough to get, or cocky enough.
Yeah.
To think that you can bring in a good recruiting class to set yourself up to have success with 3 weeks to go.
Plus
you can't do it.
He'd have to take some of these guys from Florida with him, like his, some of his recruiting guys. Like,
the first thing he would have to do is he would have to...
And rebuild a staff?
The first thing I'd do is take Billy G, get Doc Holliday. Doc Holliday might not have been a great coach, but recruiting-wise, Doc was great. Take them, say, you go get the people... get anyone you recruit from Florida, bring them to Notre Dame. I'm going to go find some of the people that are still iffy.
Yeah.
Doc, get on the people from Notre that are already committed to Notre Dame and get them to stay. Because it's so much work in order to bring in a good recruiting class in 3 weeks. Because they would have to convince all the people from Notre Dame to stay. Like, you want to be here. Especially if he's bringing in a whole new offense, which he would. Some of the guys would be like, well, this doesn't fit, suit me. He's going to have to convince them to stay. They're still going to have to be going out and recruiting the last 3 weeks, which is, as it's proven in the past, a huge time in recruiting because there's so many decommits going on. And he would want some of the people he got from Florida. So he would have so much going on. There's no way he could do it in 3 weeks.
What a disaster that would be. That would be such a logistical nightmare.
It would be a logistical nightmare.
There's no way he takes it this time around. It's not going to happen. So then you're looking at the next three-year cycle. And that makes a little more sense to me. You got the end of the Jordan Reed era at Florida at quarterback.
Trey Burton.
Trey Burton, things probably aren't going as well. That'd be a better time to slide out after the FSU game.
I think he's hoping for 2 years from Brantley. And maybe the following he'll bring in a quarterback they can actually play. What I've heard, Trey Burton is worse than Jordan Reed.
Ouch. Oh no!
Yeah, that's
no one wants that.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's got two tight ends as of right now from those quarterbacks. So.
Jeez.
Well, this isn't based on anything, but I can't see him really ever going to Notre Dame. At least not from Florida. I could see him going to the NFL from Florida.
I think this is what's going to happen. You watch it. He's going to go to the NFL. He thinks he's going to succeed there. He won't. And then he's going to be coming off of it. Notre Dame's going to have an opening. And he's going to be like, oh, Notre Dame? Sweet. I'll take that.
You know what he's going
to
do?
And that's where he gets to Notre Dame. After he failed in the NFL.
He's going
to
succeed Bill Belichick in New England.
That's what I think, too.
Right?
He's going to peak handle it up and then come back and succeed.
Well, I don't know why he wouldn't. I have no reason to think he wouldn't succeed in whatever he does at this point. I mean, pretty much anything he's done, he does well at.
He's proven himself.
So unless he makes a bad decision to get into something where he doesn't belong, which could be the NFL, I don't know. But, the whole argument people always make is he just loves college and he just loves the college game, but he's always talking about how he wants guys to be professionals. And if you were in the Georgia press conference afterward, which me and Bobby were, Junior Seau was there doing some TV show.
That's
where
he follows around
the sports reporter.
That's Junior Seau.
Yeah, Junior Seau asked a question, and it was like Christmas morning for Urban Meyer. Like, his eyes He was so jolly. He was like red and beaming, and his eyes were all like glistening.
It wasn't a good question. It wasn't.
No, but it wasn't going to be. He's a football player being a sports reporter.
Yeah.
So, but Meyer was just, oh, he was so happy. He was really in his element. And like seeing that, like, why wouldn't he want to work with guys like that? It clearly makes him very happy.
Yeah. Now, I know this is more Notre Dame based, but they shouldn't be going after guys like Urban Meyer. They shouldn't be going after the big name guys who's had success at these huge programs like Florida, where he can bring in pretty much anybody he wants, and they're gonna qualify.
Yeah.
Notre Dame's got a little bit tougher standards, as foolish as that is for them, and they can't bring in as much talent as Florida can. They bring in talent, but not to the extent of Florida. They should be going after a smaller school guy who's used to winning with lesser talent.
Yeah,
that way, when he gets there, it's not like, what am I going to do with these 4 stars? I'm used to having 5-star guys.
But you have an angry fan base who's upset and feels like they're entitled to something that they're not entitled to, but that's beside the point. You bring in a guy like Urban Meyer, the money's going to flow.
Yeah.
Fandom is going to go out of control, and you have bought yourself 4 years free of criticism.
But
if you
the
bring
thing is, like, I'd argue that he has... I don't even know, more than 4 years here at Florida without criticism.
But he's getting criticism now.
But
his
job's not on the line.
Right, but I think that's enough to show. I mean, his job's not going to be on the line anywhere he goes for a couple years, no matter what. So, like, he's going to get criticism from, like, idiot fans no matter where he goes, which has been proven this year pretty solidly. Yeah. So it's not really about that for him because, like I say, coaches never take jobs thinking they're going to fail or thinking they could fail. That's not the way you approach things like that.
Yeah.
So that's not the way Meyer's going to look at wherever he goes after Florida, if he goes anywhere.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, Notre Dame should go after people like Chris Peterson. They shouldn't touch TCU's Gabe Patterson.
Just because you want him to stay.
Yeah, I want him to stay. Yeah. What's his face? Brian Kelly.
Skip Holtz.
Not Skip Holtz.
yep. Skip Holtz.
People of that sort, maybe even Kyle Whittingham from Utah. Someone from a smaller school who's had a lot of success.
Sounds like Skip Holtz to me.
He has not had a lot of success.
All right, and since this is our Friday podcast, and just for tradition's sake, I guess, we should probably preview the FIU game this weekend. Mike?
I'm all over it. Ready for this?
Yeah.
All you need to know. The quarterback's name, Paul McCall. And if there's one thing about us McCalls, it's that we get the job done. Paul McCall is a genius. He graduated in like 2.5 years. I think he's already working on his master's. Probably going to get a PhD in the meantime. I'm not making this up. The PhD I made up.
Okay.
He's working on a master's right now.
I'm not making it up.
Except for what I just made up. I don't think he was even recruited because I went and looked on like the scout commit list for FIU for the last couple years. Couldn't find him. But anyway, Paul McCall, total baller, coming off an elbow injury. It's cool, though. He's got it down. They did bring in last week. This would be kind of interesting. You'll actually see a little flavor out of the FIU offense. Ooh. They brought in their backup quarterback, who's a little bit more of a runner last year, ran kind of a 2-quarterback switching off system, mostly McCall, because us McCalls get the job done. They also have a couple running backs they use. They run the Wildcat. They've got Dante Owens at running back, who played running back for Tebow in high school. Then they've got this guy, T.Y. Hilton. Going to want to keep your eye on Mr. Hilton. Last year, freshman All-American punt returner, total baller, also plays receiver, going to get the ball in his hands. That's all you need to know about FIU. They're going to lose big.
Yeah. I want to say I saw somewhere that FIU's like passing offense may be better than Florida's this year.
I'm going to lean toward no, but maybe. I'll look that up.
Yeah, go find some numbers there.
Well, hold on. Their passing yards per game is, in fact, about 23 yards better. Than
enjoy.
Yeah, but how many more attempts?
Statistical.
How many more attempts is that?
I don't know. That's all I care about. That's all I care about.
Their rushing yards per game is
not quite as
a measly 130 or so yards less.
All right, the point I just wanted to make is that FIU is better than Florida on offense in one statistical category, so enjoy that.
Okay.
But the biggest thing for Florida this game that I think you're going to want to keep an eye out for is something we talked about a little bit earlier. A lot of backups in this game, a lot of guys coming off the bench, getting significant playing time. John Brantley finally going
to
play.
He's earned the right to play, my friend.
Yeah, he's earned the right to play in meaningful situations, which he's
against
played
FIU.
In. Yeah. So let's talk about that. Who do you expect the big things out of coming off the bench? Maybe, you know, make a statement, somebody to look forward to going into next year.
John Brantley, I guess. I don't know.
I don't want any of this to have to project onto next year necessarily, but people I think will have a good game.
Yeah.
I think Frankie Hammond might have a decent game. Amarius Hines will have a good game.
Amarius Hines can have a great game.
Mike Gillisley will probably have a good
TJ
game.
TJ Pridemore. Man, you know how much eye formation we're gonna see? A lot.
Actually, I wonder if
Aaron Hernandez, done. He's out.
Lorenzo Edwards? Sure. Linebacker? He's a freak.
John Bostic's gonna go off.
Bostic.
I'll say double-digit tackles for John Bostic right down right now.
Save that for your Gator guarantee later, Bob.
It's not my Gator guarantee. Oh, that's going to happen. That's not bold enough.
Mm. Anything else on defense? Anybody coming out? Supposedly the defense is like four deep.
Oh yeah, Dee Finley. How about that?
Yeah. Awandi on defense appearance.
Oh. Always exciting.
So
always
I mean, fun. Your boy very T.Y. exciting. Probably whoever their best wide receiver probably will get a big game.
Is his name actually T.Y. Like
it's
T.I. the rapper?
T period Y. Yeah. Capital. Nice. Not Ty. Huh. Don't mess it up.
You know what it stands for?
Oh, you know it's pretty cool. I like T.Y. Hilton and Paul McCall a lot. On YouTube, there's a commercial they did together about trying to get fans to come out for a blackout, and they have outtakes at the end. It's pretty funny. I like them. Good guys.
So look that up on YouTube, I guess.
So cheer for them this week, because they're good guys.
At least they need some support.
Yeah, they're definitely going to need some moral support. That's how I feel bad. Like, when those teams run out and they just get harassed by Florida fans.
I don't
really
care.
You need to?
Yeah.
I don't care who.
Oh, this is the worst thing I've seen. The Florida Bookstore Volume 3, like two doors down from us here at the Alligator, out on their billboard, it says F.I. Who?
Yeah.
Really? Really? Really?
I mean.
Really? You got to take a shot at FIU?
You can do it for FAU.
The offense is struggling, man. You got to take it out on somebody.
You can do it for FAU because it's funnier. F.A. Who? Because they're owls. But, like, I mean, you're just making fun of FIU at this point. It's not fun. I had a point that I was going to make, and I can't remember.
It's probably not important. You know what does frustrate me, though, while we're on the topic of frustrating things in bookstores? Defer and I were in the University of Florida bookstore inside the Riots Union. They're selling these eye black things, the Tebow eye blacks, with his number in the verses and stuff on it. No, this is not awesome. They're once again making money off
this
of Tim
football
Tebow.
Team is awesome.
No, it's just, you don't understand. It's just a number 15 who wears eye black. It's not necessarily Tim Tebow.
But it's any Philippians 4:13. Everybody wants
it's
to
like
read
things
the Bible.
Like how in the video game, the big left-handed running quarterback number 15 from Jacksonville, not necessarily Tim Tebow. It's just a number 15
but
left-handed running quarterback.
Any place other than that's not affiliated with the University of Florida that happens to throw out a 15, like let's say a wood carved hurdle,
cease and
that's got to go.
Yeah.
But the thing I was going to say, I don't care what the score from the Citadel game was last year. Citadel won, in my opinion. They ran that trick play where they threw the ball to the quarterback who mossed whatever random cornerback was on him. It was the play of the year. I don't care what the final score is. Right down, Citadel won that game.
Shades of Joe Tereshinski a couple years ago, Florida, Georgia.
Nice. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap this up with our score predictions, and let's start with Bobby.
I said they would win by 45, the Gators, or at least cover the spread.
Let's do some math.
Yeah, I'll say FIU scores a touchdown, probably on Wandy. so I will go 7 to, what's 45 plus 7?
It's unbelievable.
Emma's got it?
52,
so they'll score 56. 56-7.
That's 52. Some odd math you just did there.
52-13, Florida wins.
13?
Yeah, well, Citadel scored 19, and the year before, FAU scored 20, I think. I mean,
you know what one of the seven or six of those points came from against Citadel? That ball and catch.
Yeah.
Play of the year.
All right, I'm going to say Florida wins 55-3.
Ooh.
No touchdowns.
Ooh.
Yeah, because I think Florida's backup defenders are even that good.
Huh.
At the FIU, not gonna drop a touchdown.
Why don't you let a big play happen?
It is really interesting that we have a team in the state in FIU that's only been playing football for like 8 years. They've only been in Division 1A for like 5 years. And they're kind of improving.
What's more impressive is that they've only had a football team for 8 years and they're already in Division 1.
Yeah.
That doesn't say anything.
Fastest program ever to go from conception to Division 1.
It says nothing about Florida, about FIU. It says everything about the talent in Florida from high school.
Yeah.
Because you can, within a couple years, you can get enough talent in order to be considered good enough to get into the D1. And also that people in Florida, especially South Florida, not so much, but people in Florida care enough that you'll be able to actually get enough money to bump it up.
Yeah, that you can build a program like that. All right, let's move on. Talk about Florida men's basketball real quick.
Nope, thank you.
Wednesday night they had a game against Georgia Southern. They won that ugly, but they won it by 20, which is twice. All right, in the last 2 years, they've beaten Georgia Southern by a combined 10 points. 10 points, Georgia Southern. Dan Warner had to score 20 points in a game 2 years ago.
Had to. This is what he does.
Of course.
Whatever is asked of him, he will do it. You ask him, we need 20 points from you, Dan.
20 and 14,
done.
Dan.
He's done.
He's just a working man. He gets it done. But yeah, that was interesting because once again, they still suck. They can't shoot threes. They still suck from beyond the arc. They can't shoot threes.
Is it Warner shooting all the threes that they're not making?
No, it's everybody. Everybody.
That's I envision Dan Warner as like going to the O'Connell Center dressed like he's going to a coal mine. Like he's got like a thermos and he's got like a huge overcoat and a lunch pail.
Yeah, he's definitely taking a lunch pail.
He
clocking
like trudges,
in.
He like trudges up. Yeah, clocks in. Oh man, it's great. He's like covered in soot.
All right.
Well, shouldn't that be him leaving? I mean, going in, he's probably somewhat clean.
They're always
coming out.
Soot.
Right.
Yeah, just oh, yeah, you can't. Yeah, it's ingrained in your skin at that point when you're doing that much work. But yeah, they won ugly, which actually should be an encouraging thing for Florida fans to see, because like a couple years, you know, in the past 2 years, this team couldn't win ugly. If they weren't shooting well, they weren't winning, even against sort of a scrappy team like Georgia Southern. So the fact that they were winning, you know, ugly, Chandler Parsons driving to the hoop, Kenny Boynton's getting to the foul line 15 times, Irving Walker doesn't make a field goal but makes 9 free throws, all very encouraging, something to look forward to going forward. So when their shots do fall, this team could actually be better than everybody's expecting.
Not me. I expect huge things,
Bob,
from this team.
Everything could go right for them, and they won't be as good as you're expecting them to be. I'm just throwing that. They're not winning 12 games.
I don't know what I was doing with that.
12 games.
I was fooling. I really somehow I quickly counted the games I thought they would lose out of conference, and I had a certain number that they were going to lose, and then I just did the math. Clearly, I counted wrong out of conference.
Second
I
national
wanted,
championship year, they probably won 14 conference games.
It's exactly.
It's unbelievable. But they're going to play Troy tonight back in the O'Connell Center, and then something to look forward to probably next Monday's podcast. We'll talk about they're going to play FSU Tuesday
FSU?
Night.
FSU?
Yeah.
Jeez.
They'll play FSU. FSU's given them a lot of trouble in the last couple years, and then they'll head out to Atlantic City, as will I.
Oh, Rutgers time, baby!
And they're going to play the number 2 team in the nation, so things are
Rutgers?
Actually... No. Things are actually about to start ramping up for the Florida basketball team. Keep an eye on that. We'll definitely talk about it. I may do a one-man podcast from Atlantic City.
Look out for the name Mike Rosario, point guard on Rutgers. Probably
going
to
calm down, all right? We've got a lot of time before we have to talk about Rutgers basketball.
Before you have to.
So let's round the show out with our Gator guarantees. Let's start with Bob, you're pointing at me. You want
to
start?
In order for the Gators to play Rutgers, they're going to have to beat Michigan State, because Rutgers is going to beat UMass and get into that championship game.
Sure.
Yeah, write it down.
All right, well, go ahead and make your Gator guarantee then, since you want to talk so much here.
Rutgers.
I swear.
Let's see. You put me on the spot.
I'm going to say, I'll do my
guess. No, I said I didn't have one.
You made a prediction and then said that wasn't it, which led me to believe that you had another one.
No, I just didn't think it was good enough.
Brandon James runs a punt back for touchdown. I also have a very weird feeling I've had for like a week now that Tebow gets hurt. I don't know if it's going to be bad enough that he misses the FSU game, but I think he gets nicked up in this game.
Wow.
Yeah. I just have this weird feeling I can't shake. It's not based on anything.
Can you feel it in your bones? This is a very odd foreseeing.
I know. I don't know what's up with it. We'll see. I'll either be right or I'll be wrong.
Yeah, that's how it works. Bob?
I'm going to piggyback off you. I'm going to admit it.
What?
You went with a David Nelson guarantee a couple weeks ago. You were
I did.
Right. I'm feeling good about this one. David Nelson's career high in catches, which he's tied before last week 2 times in a row, is 3 catches.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he's got 5.
Ooh.
5 catches. Watch it happen. David Nelson, don't let me down. I have full faith in you.
It's a pretty big increase.
Did he catch any balls in the first 2 games of the year when they were playing similar talent?
I don't know. He got zero last week and then 1 thrown to him, so that's not looking good for me coming into this one. Come on, Tebow!
That's why it's so bold.
Come on, Brantley!
Yeah, exactly. That's why it's so bold.
He had 1 catch against Charleston Southern, 2 against Troy.
Oh, good numbers.
A total of 13 yards in those two games.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a bold prediction, Bob. That's what I like out of these Gator guarantees, though.
See, and like I said, it's much more bold than 10 tackles by John Bostic. That's reasonable.
That's true. And that's why I am going to continue that, and I'm going to say that Omarius Hines and Mike Gillisley both score a touchdown.
Ooh.
Against FIU.
All right.
Gillisley could even break off a long one. I don't know.
Do we get more? I hope Cade Holliday scores.
All right. Give me 60 seconds here, all right?
60 seconds.
Great column by Phil Kegler this week about the 12th game in the regular season football and how it's crap.
Uh-huh.
This week, you got 20 teams ranked in the AP poll to play. None face a ranked foe. So what do you have to look forward to this weekend? MLS Cup, baby. It's the LA Galaxy.
No. Barry, end the show. End the show, Barry.
Listen, this is good. Landon Donovan, in his MLS career, 91% on penalty kicks. Now, LA Galaxy,
check us out on iTunes.
They know how to
podcast.
Play.
What else do we got?
This
we
is
got
good.
Facebook.
This is good.
End it.
LA Galaxy,
wrap it up. Let's
they
go,
know
Barry.
How to play for a tie, right? Okay. Real Salt Lake, Jekyll and Hyde, never know what you're going to get out of them. I think it's going to be a tie. It's going to go to shootouts. Landon Donovan, 91% in his MLS career. Best ever. The last goalie to stop him was like 3 years ago. Nick Raimondo, Real Salt Lake's goalie in this game. The goalie before that to stop him, Real Salt Lake's goalkeeping coach. Donovan's going to kick right. Raimondo's going to guess right. He's going to save it. Real Salt Lake takes the title. Underdog story of the year.
Wait, can I? Real quick question. Where's the Sounders?
Their fans will be there in droves because in their first year, they earned the MLS Cup in Seattle because they got the best supporters.
Yeah. Remember when Evan used to talk about hockey on the podcast?
But we cut him off.
Why did McCall get a beginning? He got like two or three good runs.
He got a couple good ones.
At one point, we actually had discussion.
You're telling me to end the show there?
Let's go.
All right, well, send any feedback to podcast at alligator.org. Check us out on iTunes. Leave us some reviews. Very encouraging when we get comments on the blogs and reviews on iTunes. Appreciate any ones we get. So come back Monday for another podcast. Thanks for listening.
End the show, Barry!